My name is Katie Shelton, and I may be a born and bred Buckeye, but I'm glad to be a Hoosier today.
Yay!
I moved to Muncie in July to start my first full-time job as a board-certified music therapist at Hillcroft Services Incorporated. For those who may be wondering what it is I do, music therapy is the use of music interventions by a trained professional to address a client's individualized, non-musical goals. In layman's terms, that essentially means I design and use musical activities to address goals that have nothing to do with music for my clients. Filling in song lyrics I leave out when we sing together may address a client's communication skills. Dancing to music or playing the piano can address large and fine motor goals, respectively. And working with peers in a group setting such as our music therapy choir gives clients many opportunities to improve social skills. The beauty of it is that music can be highly motivating or exciting for many people, so clients often make progress without seeing what they do in music therapy each week at work. At Hillcroft, all clients have an intellectual disability, but many also have additional disabilities and mental health disorders or a history of trauma, and yes, I do have a few clients who are blind. I get to work with a very wide variety of clients in terms of disabilities, age, and backgrounds, and I am so grateful to have found such a fantastic job at this stage of my life. I knew since my sophomore year of high school that I wanted to be a music therapist. I had music therapy as a child in a group for blind kids, and when I needed service hours for student government, I thought it would be fun to combine my passions for music and working with children by helping my former therapist in groups on Saturdays. She agreed I could help, and after a few months watching the groups and seeing her as a totally blind person do the job, I knew that music therapy was the perfect fit for me. I earned my Bachelor of Music degree and a minor in psychology from the University of Dayton and completed my clinical internship at the Music Settlement in Cleveland in public schools. I accepted the job at Hillcroft before I finished my internship and was thrilled to have a job waiting for me. I was living the dream of any young professional. I should have been ecstatic. But I wasn't outwardly celebrating as much as I should have been. While I was working to complete my internship, I had also been trying to advocate for equal access to my board certification exam. I first made contact with my certification board to ask about accessible study materials in September 2017, so just about a year ago. From that time through spring 2018, I had to repeatedly ask questions to get answers I needed. I wanted to reach out to the company as soon as possible because, as we all know, Braille takes time to produce if it isn't readily available, and web accessibility problems likewise are not always quickly addressed. After I took the practice exam and saw it was not WCAG compliant and that there were several types of visual questions I would need Braille or tactile graphics to answer on the test, I kicked my advocacy efforts into high gear. There were no clear channels of communication for students with disabilities seeking accommodations. I was told that no blind candidate had ever requested JAWS, tactile graphics, or Braille music before. I doubt that, but that's what I was told. But they all did fine with the reader. This angered me because the way in which it was said to me minimized my concerns and dismissed my accommodation requests as being unnecessary or extravagant. Everything I asked for served a purpose in leveling the playing field on this test. Furthermore, I had always tested independently using these accommodations in AP exams, on the ACT and SAT, and in my college courses. This exam was the defining test of my career, and I had worked too long and hard to surrender my independence and right to the equal access I deserved with my job on the line. My situation worsened when I stopped trying to go through the certification board and went up the chain of command to the testing company itself. When I tried to schedule my test, I was told that JAWS had been approved, but the company would not provide the Braille music or tactile graphics on the test. I continued to make phone calls to them on a daily basis and received contradictory information. At one point, I was told that the ADA made it very clear that these were reasonable accommodations and I could expect to be them to be provided. The next day, I was told it once again that I would not be getting my Braille or tachographics. At several points, I heard that other blind people had never used these and did fine, which missed the point about equal access entirely. I asked about an appeals process or if I could speak to someone in charge of accommodations, but the company had no ADA compliance or grievance process for students seeking accommodations, and no point person in charge of arranging accommodations that went beyond extended time and a human reader. While all these conversations with the testing company were taking place, I was in the process of moving to Muncie. My job was originally supposed to start on July 9th, so it was the day after our convention ended. But when I went to fill out HR forms before my first day, I was told I couldn't work until I was certified. My job was at stake, and I had advocated to the best of my abilities. So I knew that I needed to ask for help. I sent emails to several law firms specializing in disability law, and Indiana Disability Rights accepted my case for mediation. A mentor and friend of mine in Orlando talked to President Riccobono on my behalf, and they arranged for me to meet with Valerie Yingling by phone. My meeting with Valerie was the first time that I felt I had a chance of getting help. She told me that she would speak to President Riccobono after convention was over, and we would move forward if he agreed. Though I still was going to miss some work, I did sleep a little easier that night knowing that I had a chance. I continued to contact the testing company and my certification board in the week that the Jernigan Institute was closed after convention, and I mentioned that lawyers had been contacted. And I still was not able to receive answers to my questions. Once I did that, accommodations fell into place. Wouldn't you guess that? Suddenly, everything I asked for had been approved, and the company overcompensated by giving me double testing time instead of time and a half, and they moved my testing location from Indianapolis to Muncie. Valerie did call me to read a letter of support that she had drafted with President Riccobono's approval, and it felt great to know that the NFB was standing behind me, ready to help me get the accommodations I required. Of course, I told Valerie that conditions had changed for the better, and we formed a plan for continued action if the accommodations did not materialize or if I failed the test due to a lack of access. But we agreed that I should go ahead and take the test under the assumption that the company would follow through. I took my exam on July 30th and passed with flying colors. My score was respectable. Thank you for the time. My score was respectable because that I clearly knew the techniques and skills I needed to treat my clients. However, there were still some glaring accessibility problems. The test was definitely not WCAG compliant, as I couldn't access the buttons to bookmark or contest questions at all. Quite a few questions with music were not actually produced in the Braille music code, but some strange hybrid of the music code and literary Braille. I have no clue what it was. It was not Braille music, I can tell you that. The human reader I didn't really want but agreed to take was supposed to have music knowledge, but the company failed to make sure that she could read not just standard music notation, but guitar tablature for a question about guitar, which was on the exam. I do wonder if my score would have been even higher had I had full access to the test, but I was elated that I could start working. Being able to text my coworkers in the music therapy department at Hillcroft to let them know I passed and would be in the office the next day felt incredible. I also felt satisfied with my advocacy efforts, and am proud to say that I'm the first blind music therapist to have taken a nearly accessible certification. But my advocacy efforts are over. Now that I've settled into my daily job duties, I want to make sure other blind students who come after me don't have to work so hard to get basic accommodations.
Really?
For their career-defining tests. This testing company is the largest certification exam provider in the country, and blind students who test to become insurance agents, healthcare workers, engineers, and more can be similarly impacted by the lack of accessibility. I have written a letter summarizing my experiences, detailing what the ADA says and the cases that have been brought against ETS and the American Bar Association in regards to their testing practices with blind students as precedents, and providing recommendations for establishing an accessibility contact and appeals process in the future. If even one blind person doesn't have to work as hard as I did, then my time and effort will have been worth it. If you've never had to advocate this hard, I hope you never have to. It is stressful, and I wouldn't wish the fear of losing a job on anyone. If you have been there and done that with me already, I hope you never have to do it again. But if it does happen, it is so important to remember that you are your own best advocate and you are the expert on what you need. It's important to be assertive. People may tell you explicitly or implicitly that you're annoying, you're needlessly worried about being over. You're needlessly worried or being overly demanding. One thing that I got a lot was I was told I was high anxiety, which is ironic considering that they were causing the anxiety in the first place.
They don't
want
to admit.
Yeah. They may accuse you of seeking a hand out rather than just a hand up to be on equal footing with everyone else. However, there is no shame in admitting that you have done all you can do alone and reaching out for help. Although contacting lawyers was enough in my case, we as blind people have a fantastic resource in the National Federation of the Blind. We have an organization that isn't going to let companies use expense or their own convenience as excuses for not providing equal access.
Yes, right.
The NFP knows that such excuses do not justify a lack of accommodations, and that an equal playing field is necessary for blind people to live the life they want more than ever in today's competitive workforce. When individuals, companies, or agencies falsely believe that blindness can hold us back or that the rules don't apply to them, it is our right and responsibility for ourselves and those who come after us to take them to task. Thank you. Yeah.